Boker Tov, world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Chet, and we're going to be starting today's beautiful new sukkah on daf Chof Zayin Omid Beis, which is the Mishnah that begins telling us which of the Krovim are considered to be posel La'idut. So this all, of course, was triggered by our opening Mishnah, which discussed the overall halacha of whether if you're going to Beis Din, do you have a right to passel the other person's edim, which didn't make any sense. And we went through the whole understanding of what it might be talking about. But one thing was clear then. Certainly the Chachamim say the only way you could passel it is if you actually bring witnesses that he's a korov. So we introduce this idea of relatives being posel for edus. But what relatives do we mean? What is the extent of the relationship? So the Mishnah lists the krovim, but we're going to see in the Mishnah that we very painstakingly analyze the psukim, which aser the edus of krovim, in a way that allows us to tease out what the yesodos are and how many degrees of relationship we're talking about. And that's the way that we end up with the Mishnah as we have it. So this is going to take us a little bit of time to work out how we know all of this from the Torah. But essentially, what we're going to be talking about is an easy way to refer to, as we do in the Lashon of the Gemara, to the all the complicated ways that people talk about, you know, first cousins, second cousins once removed, and stuff like that. There's a very simple way of addressing the level of relationship. And that is, we talk about the first generation, the second generation, the third generation, and so on. So two brothers are actually first generation relationship. Their children are second generation. So the children of two brothers would be called a sheni b'sheni, a second generationer, whether he's believed about a second generationer. His child would be a third generationer, and that would be a question of a shlishi. Would a shlishi be believed against a sheni? And the levels, the differences between the generations, which of course are indicative of additional mixture of genes. So this is the way that we would look at the overall distance. And in that sense, the sheni b'sheni is further away than a sheni b'rishon, obviously. A shlishi b'rishon is closer than a shlishi b'sheni. You could see why that's obvious, right? Because you're going to be going past another generation and then coming back down again in order to establish that relationship. So that's an easy way for us to keep thinking about these things. And another very important yesod that's going to figure strongly in the way we understand the Mishnah, we're going to derive that from a pasuk, is the idea that even though a woman is not acceptable for testimony, but the idea that she is the object of testimony is certainly very nogea. So in other words, a brother to a sister, could he give testimony? And by the way, when we talk about giving testimony, it means either for the good or for the bad. It has nothing to do with what he's saying, whether he's saying something against her or saying something for her. So that would mean that the sister is included. Now, it's irrelevant to talk about the sister's testimony for the brother, but how about this if the sister is a man? How can the sister be a man? Well, it turns out that a married partner is considered to be the same person, but with the opposite sex. So in other words, a sister who is married, the husband of that sister is your brother for all intents and purposes. So it's the sister, but as a kosher witness, which would mean that not only can the brother not testify against the sister's husband, who is the sister in the halacha, cannot testify because of the kirva to the brother, which turns out to be his brother, so to speak. So if we keep all that in mind, then the Mishnah turns out to be a lot less arbitrary and strange than it would if we were just making a list of relatives. So what we're talking about over here in this Mishnah does not speak about the first generation because of the fact that that is what the Pasuk talks about. And as the Rambam explains in the Pirshei Mishnayos, the Mishnah doesn't come to teach us psukim. So the Mishnah is taking for granted that a son against a father cannot testify. And it's just extending that halacha. Okay, so what does that imply? And how does it imply about the banim of the father and so on? But we're going to leave out the father. So Elohim HaKrovim. So the witnesses that are considered to be pasul, according to this, taking for granted that a son to the father is pasul, would be your brother. Your brother is basically a Rishon Berishon. Your father's brother, and that father's brother would be, you would be a Sheni generation, and the father's brother would be a Rishon generation. And the same way that you're prohibited from your father's testimony or vice versa, all of these work in both directions, so too the father's brother is also going to be possible for you and you for him. Your mother's brother, because all of these are irregardless of the sex, and therefore they're all included, and so too is the male equivalent of this person. So let's say if your sister is married, so your sister's husband is basically your sister. Your father's sister husband is basically your father's brother. Your mother's sister husband is the same thing as your father's brother. Because even though these are both women, and it's irrelevant about their testimony for you, but your testimony against them would be the equivalent of your going ahead and testifying against your father's brother. So here, it's your mother. Well, your mother can't testify, but you're obviously not able to testify against her any more than you would be able to testify against your father. And if your mother has a sister who's married, so then that would mean that this is the equivalent of your father's brother, because your mother is your father in terms of the relationship, and the sister of that mother's husband is your father's brother. So basically what we're doing here is we're simply extending the simple meaning of the pasuk that tells us that first generation to second and second generation to each other are not kosher, and we're going to see how we know that in the pasuk, but that means that these are all really, what we're talking about is really the same thing. It sounds very complicated, but we've got three relatives over here. It's just that there are three relatives in the masculine format. They're the same exact three relatives when we translate them into their female equivalents, right? So we've got your brother, your father's brother, and your mother's brother, which equals your sister's husband, who's your brother, your father's sister husband, who's your father's brother, and your mother's sister husband, which is your mother's brother. So that gives us six, even though it's really only three. Now, your mother's husband is the equivalent of that first generation testifying against your father. So your mother's husband would be Aser Baal Imo. Your father-in-law, because even though it's through a marriage with a female, would be the equivalent of the first generation, and that's like your father. And your brother-in-law, Giso, this means a brother-in-law in the sense of your wife's sister's husband, is the equivalent of a brother, because your wife's sister's husband is her brother, and she is your wife, which means that you and her are one, so it's as if the brother is testifying against you. So again, it's all very direct. It's simple cases translated into their female equivalents. Now, when we say that all...
Is that because they become Basar Echad?
What?
Sorry, does
that... Will you please not attempt to guess the Gemara that's coming up and have patience to hear the Gemara? We don't have to look into the psukim yet, when I told you that we're going to be looking carefully and getting through where we get this from in the Gemara. Fine. Now, we have to add to this, to these cases, not only themselves, but their children. So these people themselves are all apostle. Hain, their children are apostle. Their sons, in other words, because their sons are roy for Edus. And their son-in-laws, because again, the son-in-law is the equivalent of the son, because it's the equivalent of your daughter as a male. So that's the son-in-law, would be exactly the same as their sons. Now, there's one additional thing that we have to add, and that would be a stepson. So if you marry a woman with a son, then that stepson alone is possible, but not his son and not his son-in-law. Omer Rebbe Yossi, this Mishnah is correct as stated, but it is a later Mishnah which Rabbi Akiva had expanded from the original format of the Mishnah, and it's not the way the Mishnah Rishona was constructed. Now, you will recall that we often find that there was an early Mishnah that Rebbe had set down as a Mishnah, and sometimes he changed the Mishnah according to developments later on after the original Mishnah that people had been used to learning. So Rabbi Yossi wants us to know that this format of the Mishnah is actually the way Rabbi Akiva built it because of the way that he darshaned the psukim. However, there was an earlier Mishnah, and the earlier Mishnah had related the dinim of testimony to the dinim of Yerusha. So remember that we have two completely different parshiot that discuss the implications of sharing genes. One of them is the parsha of Yerusha. Now, Yerusha, of course, is sharing genes, but it only goes in one direction because it only goes through a father. And that severely crimps the list that we would have over here, because if you are not roy to be yorish someone, and you're basing the relationships on who is suitable to be an heir, so then you'd be cutting out most of the relationships through women here, because usually the Yerusha will only go through the Yorshe Ha'av. Now, you could be a Yorish Ha'im, but then it's only in one direction. The son could be Yorish the aim is not Yorish the son, because it goes back to his father's family. So if you base it on the other list of genetic sharing, which is this Parsha of Arias, obviously, so then you've got a completely different picture where all of those female relatives are exactly the same, but that makes a big difference, as we're going to see. And therefore points out Rabbi Yossi that, yes, the list is definitely a nice list, but it's not the original list. This is the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah Rishona, before Rabbi Akiva came up with his drushes, would have a totally different way of saying it. And the Mishnah Rishona said, Dodo, that means your father's brother, Uben Dodo, your cousin, the son of your father's brother, and anyone that would be yoresh you that are on that level of sheni, the maximum of sheni b'sheni, which is the ben dodo. So anyone that would be yoresh you on the level of a sheni b'sheni would be included. And we also need to note that a lot of these relationships via marriage, they're not permanent, obviously. So if a man has a son-in-law, this guy is married to his daughter, and he's not allowed to testify, neither of them on the other. But if his daughter died, and now this person is no longer related to him, did the marriage define a permanent relationship in which one is possible for the other? No. It was only if at the time of the testimony, or at the time that he saw the event that he's testifying about, he was a relative, only then is he considered to be possible. But if he was initially related, so he was married to this man's daughter, and then nitrachek, the daughter died, so then he's no longer related. And at that point, hareze kasher. So what this means is that the definitions that we're talking about over here are not definitions that are dependent on psychology. And it makes no difference whether you're testifying in their benefit, you're testifying against them. It's irrelevant. It is an innate psul that the Torah gives. As far as we're concerned, we look at it as gezerata katuv, where there may be elements that we need to take into consideration, as we'll see later on, of psychology. But fundamentally, just because this person was once related to another individual and he was in son-in-law, And maybe he hates his guts. I don't know. Or maybe he's very close to him. But that's not the point. The point is, he's no longer related. And therefore, Haya Karov v'Nitrachek, Harei Zeh Kasher. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, now let's not be too hasty about that, because we do have to take into consideration the other emotional elements that may color testimony. And therefore, in the event that we've got, before I speak about that, where he talks about the way that you feel about a person, he points out something else, that if this man's daughter died, and the individual is once his son-in-law, is no longer his son-in-law, it's not really true necessarily. Because if there are surviving children from this daughter who died, then those children maintain the link between the father-in-law and the son-in-law through the grandchild. And therefore, they would still be considered relatives. Afilu meta bito, v'yesho banim imena, harei zeh karov. Continues Rabbi Yehuda to say, there is also an important emotional element, which is ha'ohev v'hasoneh. If somebody is very close to you, or they hate your guts, and they're very far from you, that itself passels them from being an aide or from being a dayan. What do I mean when I say he's a friend? I don't mean a casual friend. I mean shushbinot. So remember we had the whole din of shushbinot, where somebody is part of the other one. He's the best man at the wedding, if you know what they call him in English. Groom's, what do they call him?
Best man.
No.
Best man.
Groomsman.
No, groomsman. Thank you. So if he's a groomsman, so then during those 7 days where he's the one that was bringing the food to the wedding and so on, so he is called the shushbin. Remember all the dinim of shushbinos we had recently? And if he's a shushbin, during those 7 days, he's considered to be the equivalent of a relative because he's so emotionally close. When I say that he's an enemy, I mean someone that for 3 days hasn't spoken a word to this person only because of the fact that he hates his guts. So they were together and didn't share a word. The Chachomim say, no, that's not true. Lo nechshedu Yisrael al kach, we don't consider, and this, we've been talking about the Rosh Hashita, about the psul of Eidos, we do not consider a person to have lost their kashrus because of their emotions. They're not going to lie as a witness and still is a perfectly eid kosher. Now that's in terms of Eidos. If you're talking about in terms of being a dayan, well, a dayan has to be able to be mahapech bischuto. He's not just talking about the uvdot. He is someone who's using his judgment, and of course, judgment will be warped by these strong feelings. And that the Chachamim would agree with Rabbi Yehuda. But we're talking about over here those things that the Torah passed in terms of testimony. We have no reason to believe that a person would lie just because he hates someone's guts. Now, all of this seems very arbitrary. Where exactly do we see in the Torah that this is exactly what is meant by the psul of Eidos? I mean, you're being very strict in terms of your definitions here. Where does it come from? Well, the Braita says, look, there's a very clear-cut pasuk that is telling us what Eidos is acceptable. And I know you won't think when you first hear it that it has anything to do with this topic at all, but I'm going to show you that it does. The Torah says, Lo yumtu avot al banim, uvanim lo yumtu al avot, ish b'cheto yumat. So you think that that means, all right, people will not be punished by God for the sins of the fathers, etc., etc., right? No. Matamadlama, what do you think this pasuk really means? You think it's telling me, Lelame, shelo yumtu avot ba'avon banim, ubanim ba'avon avot? You think that that's what it means? Children don't die because of the sins of the fathers? Fathers don't die because of the sins of the children? That's totally redundant. The end of the pasuk said, beferush, ish b'cheto yumatu. Doesn't, I mean, you know how to read? So what would be the point of repeating it? If you're making a clear-cut statement that people only die of their own sins. Ish bechetao yumatu. So what is meant by these words of lo yumtu avot al banim, ubanim lo yumtu al avot? Therefore, I tell you, lo yumtu avot al banim means avot shall not die based on the testimony of their children. Banim lo yumtu al avot means the same thing, that the banim shall not die on the edut avot. Now, wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me that children don't die with the sins of the father? I mean, these Christians are running around all the time, and it's in the sins of the father. And that's a pasuk, isn't it? Poked avon, avot al banim, val bnei vanim. I mean, what do you mean children don't die based on the sins of their father? It's simply not the case. Voktiv, poked avon, avot al banim. Ah, that's talking about something else. If a child maintains the behavior of a father, there's a father who's an apikoros, and he's going to continue the path of the father, and he too will be an apikoros. He's got a father who's a drunkard, and he too is going to continue being a drunkard. Well, that's different, because then the sins of the fathers are innate in the children. So over there, indeed, kisha ochazim ma'asei avotehem b'yedehem, when they continue to follow that path, then their commitment is to the sins of their fathers. And that's a bright. It says in the Pasuk that anisharim bachem yimaku ba'avonam ba'atzot ayvehem. So this it says in the Tochacha and Vayikra, and whoever will be left in this golas, they'll end up melting away because of their sins in the land of their enemies. And then it throws in the words, the af ba'avonot avotam itam yimoku, and they will also rot away based on the sins of their fathers with them. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean that they will, in fact, be punished for the sins of the father? Continues the Braita, what that means is, kisha ochazim ma'ase avoteihem b'yedeihem. In fact, if you're medayik in the pasuk, it says av ba'avon avotam itam yimoku. So you say that that's referring to atomer kishochazim. Maybe it's even in the sins of the fathers. Maybe even kishenochazim. Well, since the pasuk that we learned before said ish bechet o yumatu, hare kishochazim ma'ase avoteihem b'yedeihem. So clearly, if the pasuk says there's no such thing as someone dying for someone else's sin, so then when it says av bavon avotam itam, it must mean literally itam, and that means that they are continuing to hold on to the paths of the father. Now, wait a minute. Okay, but there's a whole other deal, isn't there? How can you say that a person only dies in his own sin if we know that there's a din of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazet, and we learn that from the pasuk of V'chashlu Ish Be'achiv? Every man will fail because of the way that his friend has failed, and they will be running Kibipnei Cherev and so on. Lo Tielach Abtkuma Lifnei Oivichem. That's because of Be'achiv. And we understood that to mean ish be'avon achiv, that a person can die of the sin of his brother, which teaches us malam shekulam arevim zeh bezeh. So what does the pasuk mean when it attempts to set down the rule that ish bechato yumato, people will die only for their own sin, when the pasuk says beferish that they are responsible for other people's sins? So I understood the part about the sins of the fathers. But what about the din of Kol Yisrael Arevim, Elam Shekulam Arevim Zeh B'Zeh? Answers the Gemara, the din of Arvut is Kishaya B'Adam Limchot V'lo Michu. That's only where they were able in some way to affect the outcome, or to possibly affect the outcome, as the Gemara in Shabbos makes clear, and they didn't. So if you don't give a hang about the outcome of other people's lives, then you become an accomplice to what it is that they're doing. That's when we say that it's Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh B'Zeh, but then it's your sin. Then it's not the other person's sin. It's still 100% correct to say Ish bechato yumasu, nobody is punished for someone else's sins, unless it's their own. How could it be their own? If they're okazimase avotem bideyem, for instance. Or if they are accomplices in the sense that they didn't attempt to stop that avera by being mochiach. Okay, so now I'm ready to accept. A father cannot give testimony to a son, and a son cannot give testimony to a father. I mean, but the Mishnah sure goes way beyond that, doesn't it? How do you get the other stuff? I mean, a father to son is Rishon L'Sheni or Sheni L'Rishon. But, and okay, I understand that that means for sure that the two brothers who are Rishon B'Rishon, who are even closer than the Sheni B'Rishon, okay, I understand it includes that. So that teaches us Avot L'Banim, Banim L'Avot, and Kol Shekein the Avot L'Hadadi, meaning the two brothers to each other, which would be a Rishon Rishon. But the Mishnah said that you're not even allowed to have testimony of the sons of the brothers, which was a Sheni B'Sheni, first cousins. First cousins would then be Pasul, according to the Mishnah, but it doesn't say that in the Pasuk anywhere. Where'd you get that idea? Banim libanim, minolan. You're claiming that when it says avot libanim, that's the same thing as banim levanim, which it most definitely is not. It's an additional generation apart. So where'd you get that from? Ah, because you see, if we only meant in the Pasuk that you're possible to testify against your uncle, but you're not possible to testify against your uncle's child, namely your first cousin. So then all it needed to say in the Pasuk is lo yumtu avot al bain, right? But why did it say lo yumtu avot al banim? So that's what it's saying. It's saying these banim are also included in lo yumtu al yedeya, meaning the two banim on each other, which are the first cousins. The banim of these two brothers, who are first cousins to each other, are also possible to be made to each other. So now we know that in the Pasuk, Sheni B'Sheni, Sheni B'Rishon, Rishon B'Rishon, that is all included. That means Afilu Banim Lahadadi. Great, right? Isn't this fun? So now we see how the Pasuk is evolving, and we're able to start stretching the cases. Now, when we say that children are prohibited, but remember that the psul of Edus is always a psul of Edus to each other vis-a-vis a third party as well. So in other words, a father and a son cannot testify against the third party, right? Two first cousins would not be kosher witnesses against an unrelated third party. But where does that come from? The pasuk that you're bringing is only about what their relationship is to each other, but not the fact that they are related means that they are therefore not considered to be Adam with each other. Isn't that a totally different concept? So where did that come from? So Ashkechan Banim Lahadani. But what about Bunim to be testifying for a third party? That should be okay. Omer Rami Bar Chama, well, it's true the Pasuk doesn't say that, but we can figure that out simply through the rationale of the following Svara. Because, look, let's consider the fact that Kidetanya, Ein Eidim Na'asim Zomemim, Achi Zomu Shneihem. Now, you can never kill an Eid Zomim, be Mechayev an Eid Zomim. He's only an Eid Zomim if both witnesses are Zomimim. So we have to have witnesses that come and say, you were both with us in a different place at the time that you're both claiming to have witnessed an event, right? But if you're only Mazim one of them, then they don't become Eidim Zomimim. Now, in the event that two cousins, two brothers, fathers and son, they testified against the third party. Let's say this third party killed someone. So then what's going to happen is if Adim that are Mazim them come along, we're going to kill the father and son, right? Because they wanted to kill this other guy. And they're Adim Zomimim. But the only way that they're Adim Zomimim is because of the fact that the father is being killed because the son gave testimony, and the son's being killed because the father gave testimony. So it boils down to a violation of Lo yumtu avot abanim, banim alavad. Very cute, right? Says Rami Bar Chama. So it follows from the din of Edim Zomimim that in the same way that these two people cannot testify against each other or for each other, they also cannot testify for or against a third party. Nice, says Rava, nice, but wrong. Because, look, if what you're saying is right, then what are you going to do with the Mishnah that we just had in Bava Batra? Remember that there's a concept of a chazak of 3 years on a property, right? Which allows you to keep that property, even though you can no longer produce your bill of sale. So this takes the place of the shtar, the chazak. Now, we don't need the same two people testifying for the same 3 years. So the din over there was, let's say you have three brothers. One brother testifies that this guy was in the property in year one. Another brother testifies that this guy was in the property in year two. A third brother testifies that this guy was in the property in year three. Each one of these brothers had with him another third party who wasn't a member of the family. And that party was aware of all 3 years, right? So the din over there is that these are three separate eduyot, each one of them testifying to another year. And the only way that you could end up making them edim zomimim, which would mean that they would have to pay for the field that they were attempting to take away from the real owner of the field, if we accepted all three of these edut, so then they're all considered to be one edut for Hazoma. And they would all share the costs of the field that they were coming to be mafsid in the event that they're all turned out to be Zomimim. Uh-oh. But then that means that you're only able to be Mechayev, one of the brothers, based on the testimony of the other two brothers, right? And you, Rami Bar Chama, you said that, well, the very fact that the Hazama would come about through the brother's testimony or through the father's testimony would be the full equivalent of killing the father based on the son's testimony. Nonsense, says Rava. The Mishnah is telling you that that is a silly argument, because the fact that they can be related through the Hazama doesn't mean that you're killing one or punishing one based on the other one's testimony. That it happens to be that they were the aid, but they weren't testimonying for you or towards you or anything. The Hazama, that was something else that came from left field. So according to you, you should say that Nimtza Eid Zomim Mishale Mamon Be'edut Achiv. He's going to end up paying for that field based on the testimony of his other two brothers. So Ella, why is this not true? Because Hazama Mi'alma Ka'ati. The Chiv of the Eidim Zomimim is out of left field. That came from another guy, another group of Eidim that was... So it happens to be that that's the only way that you would be called an Eid Zomim. But, I mean, that's just a technicality. So, therefore, it's clear that the Mishnah is not agreeing with Rami Bar Chama. So don't try to tell me it's a Svara. So we're back to where we started from. How do we know? I understand very clearly from the Pasuk that we know that a Rishon B'Rishon, a Rishon B'Sheni, and a Sheni B'Sheni cannot testify for or against. We're going to see how we know that from the Pasuk, that it can be either for or against, but let's take that for granted right now. For or against each other. But how do we know that they're puzzle in the event that they're related from testifying at all? Where do you get that from? Okay. Let's go back to the Pusik. I say this too is innate in the Pusik. It just requires a little bit closer analysis. The Pusik could have written, Lichtovkra ubein al avot. So what it should say is, lo yumat bein al avot, or you could have said heim al haavot, meaning instead of saying banim again, you would use a pronoun, right? The heim al avot. So why do you repeat the word banim twice? Why do you say avot al banim, which was your first? It should have said avot al bain. Okay, so avot al banim is the second cousins. The first cousins, the second generation, meaning sheni b'sheni. But why did you have to repeat the word banim instead of using a pronoun? You could have used the pronoun or them with the fathers. So when you add an additional bonim, what you're saying is, afilu bonim li alma, bonim qua bonim or puzzle, not only to each other are puzzle, but are puzzle with each other. And they are not considered to be testimony at all. Ha! So that means that so far what we've been able to see is that Rishon, L'Rishon, Rishon, L'Sheni, Sheni, B'Sheni, and vice versa, all of these are included, plus any of the above to any third party are not considered to be Eitus. Now, all of this in the Pasuk is based on Avot. How did you come to start talking about your mother's brother, your mother's sister's husband? Where the heck does that come from if the Pasuk has been very careful to speak only about fathers? So Ashkechan Kroveha Av, where did you get this idea in the Mishnah that Kroveha Em are included? Now that's because the Pasuk mentions Avot twice. Again, very carefully avoiding any kind of pronoun. So, Avot al Banim, Banim al Avot. Why does it have to use the word Avot twice? It should just say, Mehem, Mehem. But if it mentions Avot, then we have the special halacha of how to be Dorish HaPasik. And remember what that is called. Im eno inyan le x, tnehu inyan le y. And therefore, if it mentions the avot twice, which I don't need for avot, it means that the concept of avot is not a question of the gender of the avot. It's a question of the genes of that generation of avot. And therefore, it includes as well the women. So that would mean the sisters are included, mothers are included. It has nothing to do with the maleness of the avot. So in eno inyan lekrovei ha'av, tneihu inyan lekrovei ha'em. And therefore, we now have all those additional cases of the relationships through mothers. Now, in the pasuk, it only seems to be saying that we don't want people to die on the basis of this type of testimony. But that would mean that you are saying something against them. Now, it seems to only be telling me that these Edim are not acceptable to say something against that relative. But how do we know that they can't say anything in the benefit of that relative? L'schut minolam. We know that from that same pasuk. Wow. Very information rich. How do we know that? Because why did the Torah have to mention twice yumtu? You say, lo yumat avot al banim, vehem aleihem. Well, I mean, vehem would mean, and they should not die. Why do you have to repeat lo yumtu? So therefore, it's again, anim eno inyan. The yumat is lechovah. Im eno inyan lechovah, since I already know that from the first yumat, tneu inyan lezechut. So then that means that this pasuk is telling me that all of the above are pasul eidus, whether they're coming to say something good or they're coming to say something bad, and whether they're coming directly to testify against each other or whether two of them who would not be allowed to testify for or against each other were coming to testify against or for a third party. Whoo. Okay, now, all of this, so far, has only been in terms of yumtu. Yumtu means we're talking about capital cases here. How do we know that this is true, even in, like, a standard civil case, you know, a little bit of money that a guy owes? So, ashkechan b'dinei nefashot. How do we know that the same exact din is true, even in dinei mamonot? Ah, that's because of the general rule that we've spoken about before. The Torah says, Mishpat echad yiyelachem. There aren't different ways of defining the fundamental principles or rules of justice. They cut across a penny and a life. Mishpat HaShaveh Lechem, they're always exactly the same. So anything that has to do with the proper procedure of justice is one and the same. We've already seen, doesn't matter how much money is involved, it doesn't matter if you're talking about Dini Momonos or Dini Nefashos, we did find that the Rabbanon made differences because of the need for smooth transactions and commerce and so on. But as far as the Torah is concerned, where we're dealing with the essence of testimony, that's part of the fundamental rules of justice, and all of these Edim are considered to be pasul for any and every type of din. Now, let's see some practical applications of this, because it certainly sounds like the way we just understood the Pasuk and the Mishnah is not the way that we're actually applying the halacha. Listen to what Rav said, and he seems to violate what we just learned. Omar Rav, my father's brother, Lo Ya'idli, he can't testify for me. Now, that's clear. That's great. That's from the Pasuk. I know that. But then he adds, his son cannot testify against me, and his son-in-law cannot testify against me. Okay. So far, I don't have anything much against that. Son? Okay. That would be my first cousin. His son-in-law, we said, well, that's considered to be the same as a son because it's through a woman. But dig this. The same thing is true, says Rav, that I cannot testify against him. And not only can I not testify against him, my son cannot testify against my father's brother, and my son-in-law cannot testify against them. Oh, now wait. You're telling me that my son and my son-in-law is also puzzle? But that's another generation. That's a third generation. So you're telling me that it's a shlishi berishon, and that even a shlishi berishon is usher. That's what Rav is saying. I'm a sheni berishon, and my son, who would be a shlishi against his great uncle, that he also can't be an aid. The Mishnah never said anything like that. We never saw a hint of such a thing in the Psukim. The most that we were able to derive was a sheni b'sheni, but a shlishi b'rishon, we never even touched on this concept of having a third generationer. So where did Rav get that from? V'amai. Havile shlishi b'rishon. In our Mishnah, the maximum that we were able to go ahead with was a sheni b'sheni t'nan, yes, and certainly a sheni b'rishon, which is even one step closer, but we never saw anything about a shlishi b'rishon. So Rav seems to be saying things that are not in the Mishnah and are not in the Pasuk. How do you explain that? No. Actually, our Mishnah does teach a shlishi, and we have to figure out how we know it. But where does our Mishnah talk about a shlishi? You thought that the word b'no v'chatano meant the guy's own son-in-law? No. It's b'no and the chatan b'no, which adds another generation. So it's like the equivalent of the son's son. Well, darn it, just say so. So we say ben b'no, so say the son's son. I mean, it's a weird way of saying it, chatano. It's not a weird way of saying it at all. It's actually a wonderful way of saying it if you use your brains. If I tell you that the son's son is pasul, I'm not teaching you the chiddush that a son-in-law is the full equivalent of a son, am I? So if I tell you, and the son and his son-in-law, so you're, oh my God, so you're telling me that a son-in-law is the equivalent of a son. Wow. So now I know two big chiddushim. I know that, first of all, a third generation to a first generation is pasul. And I also know that a son-in-law is the full equivalent of a son. Okay, that's just being efficient in the information density, which is a din in the Torah. The olam yilamed person has to always be teaching b'derech yitzara. So I'm teaching you as much as I can in as short a form as I can. Wow. So then, if it doesn't say ben B'no, it's milta agav urcheko mashmalan, that the husband of a person, not only am I telling you that a shlishi is also considered, that I could have told you with saying a son's son, but if I'm telling you a son-in-law, so then that means that a husband is considered to be the same thing as that woman, which means that just like the son is pasul, his daughter is pasul. Of course, his daughter can't give testimony, but his daughter can be married to a man who would give testimony, and that would be the equivalent of being that man. So what do you see from there? Amazingly, that a husband and a wife is one entity. Wow. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's, none of this is true. Well, what about the famous Braita? Rabbi Chiya actually boils things down in the following way. He says, look, there's only 8 relatives that are really mentioned in the Mishnah. The rest are just extensions because they are the sons or the son-in-laws of those relatives. So, according to him, we've only got these 8. And if you add Bnehem, and if you add Chatanehem, so then you've got 8 primes, 8 sons, and 8 son-in-laws. Now, it's true that the Mishnah lists 9 people, but remember that it says Chorgo Levado. Chorgo Levado means he's not part of this having an Ovais and Toldais, because it's only him. Rabbi Chiya is coming to say, in terms of the Ovais, so we've got only those 8 cases, and their sons, and their son-in-laws. That's what he said. And that would mean that we don't have a 3rd generation. So how do you tell me over here that it means the Chatan Bino? So that means, according to Rabbi Chiya, things are very, very simple. What do we have? We have your brother. We have your father's brother. We have your sister's brother. Then we have the 3 equivalents. Your sister's husband is your brother. Your father's sister's husband, which is the equivalent. And then you've got your mother's sister's husband. Then we've got your stepfather, your father-in-law, but those are we don't include the stepson, as we'll see, for the whatever reason. It's obvious what the reason is, but the Gemara will speak about it. And the Mishnah adds Hain Vnehem and also the Chatanehem. So you have to give each one. There's another 8 sons, and there's another 8 son-in-laws. Okay, so 3 times 8 is 24. And that's what Reb Chiya says. You've got 24 cases. But if what you're saying is true, you've got 32 cases. Because you'd have to add 1 more generation. The truth is, of course, you'd have 40 cases, right? Because you'd have another 8 sons and another 8 son-in-laws. But we don't need, once we've mentioned the idea that son-in-laws are included, we don't need to repeat it again. So we've got another 8 extensions, whether they're genetic extensions or they're the female equivalent. That's the same. I'm not going to list that as, I mean, that's just being pedantic to talk about 40, but certainly it should say 32. We should be adding 1 more generation, and we don't. So obviously, the Mishnah means what it says. It doesn't mean another generation of Chatano, meaning Chatan Beno. It means your Chatan, either your son or your Chatans. Don't give me this stuff. Okay, you're right. Our problem stands. Rav seems to be talking about a case that the Mishnah very studiously avoids mentioning, which means that Rav is contradicted by the Mishnah. So it must be we misunderstood. What the Mishnah meant was Chatano Mamash, of course. And Rav meant the same thing. The reason that Rav says Chatan Beno, basically, so he's calling it an additional, a Shlishi, right? But the Mishnah has only had it as a Sheni. So how come Rav could say the sons third generation is Usser, because Rav is using the term of one step of distance for a marital relationship. Someone who comes in from the outside is viewed as being one step away genetically. That's how he's referring to it. So as we have our basic relationships of Rishon L'Rishon, Sheni L'Sheni, and then what we would call the Shlishi L'Rishon, which is not included. But Rav is saying, let us call, Kivan Demi Almakati. This guy is coming from outside of the gene pool that we're talking about. So we give him as if he's a generation away. So he's considered to be Kidor Acher. And therefore, he, of course, the Mishnah means your own son-in-law. But that son-in-law is not really related to you. So then he's considered to be a third generational. And if you have your cousin who is Sheni Bashini, or your cousin who is a cousin because he's an in-law cousin, that is the equivalent of a Shlishi L'Sheni. That's what he means. Oh, that doesn't make any sense. If you're telling me that Rav really considers to be the fact that he's coming from elsewhere to be the equivalent of a generation gap, so we have the same problem. And it's even worse because Rav contradicts himself. If he's considered to be another generation away, so then what Rav would be saying is that he's a Shlishi B'Sheni, because the Mishnah says that your uncle's son or your uncle's son-in-law, right? We could have your cousin-in-law if this is your uncle's son-in-law, so he's your cousin-in-law. But according to Rav, an in-law is the equivalent of saying, add one generation. So your second cousin-in-law would be a Sheni L'Shlishi, right? Because we're considering him to one generation removed. The thing is that we know that Rav himself said that a Shlishi B'Sheni actually is kosher. Because look at the words of Rav. Rav says, I cannot be an aid for my father's brother, not me, not my son, not my son-in-law. Okay, my father's brother, but not my father's brother's son. I have no problem testifying against my father's brother's son. Why not? Why not? It's a Shlishi. What you're saying is he would be the equivalent of a Shlishi B'Sheni. So I don't understand. Rav himself is saying a Shlishi B'Sheni is okay. So that my son would have a problem testifying against his great uncle. Okay, fine. That's a Shlishi B'Rishon. He never said anything about a Shlishi B'Sheni. He wouldn't have a problem testifying against his child, would he? And that, if Rav held he would, then he would have had to say he is not allowed to testify even against my uncle, his great uncle, he's not allowed to testify even against the son of the great uncle, which would mean a Shlishi B'Sheni. That would be a bigger Kiddush. But Rav only talked about a Shlishi B'Rishon. See how easy it is to understand it when you talk about the number of generations instead of using all these terms of cousins, first removed, three, or whatever, right? Okay, so this is very clear. So Rav could not possibly have said, I consider a generational gap and a gap in terms of genes because you're coming from elsewhere to be equivalents, because then he's contradicting himself. It's even worse than it was before now. I'm sorry. Take everything back. You don't understand Rav at all. Let's bite the bullet, man. Rav is not going to fit into the Mishnah, okay? So what is he relying on? Rav is going according to a completely different Mokar, another Tana. This is Rabbi Elazar. This is the bright of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, "Kishem sha'achi abba lo ya'idli." Look, my uncle, my father's brother, is not kosher as an aid for me. It says that beferish in the Mishnah. He is not kosher. His son is not kosher. His son-in-law is not kosher. Fine, okay, that's what the Mishnah says. But says Rabbi Elazar, but it works in the other way too. My father's brother's son is also not able to be an aid against me, nor can his son be, nor can his son be an aid against me, but that's a Shlishi B'Sheni. And his son-in-law can't be an aide against me? That's right. Okay, that's what Rav holds. What do you mean, that's what Rav holds? That's ridiculous. That's not what Rav holds. I mean, it's true that at least this supports part of what Rav was saying, because Rav was saying a shlishi berishon is possible. But over here it says a shlishi b'sheni is possible. And when Rav made his statement, he specifically left out shlishi berishon, my friends. So what are you talking about? This can't be Rav holding Rebbe Elazar, because Rebbe Elazar just mentioned a shlishi b'sheni, and we just saw that Rav is machshir a shlishi b'sheni. So how could Rebbe Elazar be the mocker of Rav Shita? That's crazy. No. It's not crazy at all. Rav agrees with Rebbe Elazar fundamentally that we do include third generation. However, he holds we only include the third generation against the first generation. So it's a shlishi l'rishon, but he disagrees with that additional gap of a shlishi l'sheni. But in terms of how he is arguing with the Mishnah, he can rely on Rabbi Elazar and that shita to paso a shlishi b'rishon, which is what Rav said. You'll tell me, but Rabbi Elazar himself holds even a shlishi b'sheni is paso, fine. That part I don't agree with. That part I go according to the Tana of our Mishnah. I'm not mechuyev to follow all the way what Rebbe Elazar holds. So Rav Sever Lakavate Bechoda, Upolagale Bechoda. Now the question is, okay, but where's he coming from in terms of the Pasuk? How does it fit into the Pasuk? So my time at the Rav. Rav has got to see that Rebbe Elazar is darshaning the Pasuk. And he says, look, it says, Lo yomtu avot al banim ubanim. What's that ubanim? What's that vav there? That's telling me al banim uvanim, meaning on the banim and on their own banim, which is a third generation. So therefore, we can actually extend it by one generation. And what about Rebbe Elazar? I mean, this doesn't say 3-2. It only says 3-1, right? Yavot al banim banim. But this is, he's saying that it would be banim banim on banim. Where do you get that from? So Rebbe Elazar says, well, it says al banim. Al banim's the psule de avod shadei banim. In other words, anybody who was puzzled for that first generation is puzzled for the banim of that generation. So it's al banim. So he's got both. U banim, al banim. That would mean third generation on second generation. So all, it turns out that all of this and all of these other possibilities are in the original pasuk. It's all one simple pasuk. It's astounding.
Can Rebbe say that again, Rebbe Elazar? Who's doing al banim?
He's saying banim ubanim, al banim. Throw that iser on the banim of the ovis that you were just talking about and their banim. So that would mean that if it's possible for the Ovis, it's possible al der banim too. So the banim banim are possible for the banim of these avot. That's shlishi b'sheni. Lovely. So suddenly everything starts becoming very clear when it just sounded like a big old mishmash at the beginning. Omer Reb Nachman. There's another thing, says Reb Nachman. You know, the Mishnah, it sounds very simple, but if you actually analyze the relationships in it, you come up with a lot of things that you didn't first notice, okay? I'm not saying big chidushim here. I just want to point out that you do have to let your mind run through the various steps that we're talking about. So for instance, says Reb Nachman, my mother-in-law has a brother, okay? So, what's a mother-in-law's brother, right? But he's puzzled for Adas, as I'm going to show you. My mother-in-law has a brother, and that brother has a son. He's puzzled for me. That's crazy. My mother-in-law's brother, son, you're kidding. So she's also puzzled. And he can't testify for me. And what's more, my mother-in-law has a sister, and she has a son, and he can't be an aide for me either. And it's all very simple. It's straight there in the Mishnah. I'm not saying any big news. I'm just pointing out to you how surprising these relationships actually turn out to be. The Mishnah essentially has said that straight out, and you didn't even notice, okay? Because what the Mishnah said was, is that Baal Achoto, Baal Achot Aviv, Ubaal Achot Imo, Hein Uvnehem Vechatanehem. So, your sister has a husband, your father's sister has a husband, your mother's sister has a husband, and they and all their relatives are going to be included. Okay, so then says Reb Nachman, look, my mother-in-law, she has a brother, she has a sister, that it said beferish in the Mishnah. Then it says Uvnehem, so then the brother has a son, the sister has a son, that means the mother-in-law's sister's son is beferish in the Mishnah. You just didn't notice, you know? Omer Rav Ashi, Ki Avinan Be'ula. I was visiting Ula, and we asked at that time, guys that had come to visit there, what would be the din of my father-in-law, and he has a brother? So is my father-in-law's brother also a son? And what about if he has a son? So my father-in-law has a brother who has a son. I mean, these people don't seem related to me at all. And what about if my father-in-law has a sister who has a son? So what would be the din? And Ula pointed out to us, same kind of thing that Reb Nachman did. You haven't read the Mishnah carefully, okay? These are cases in the Mishnah. Tanitua, didn't you read the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Hein Uvnehen Vechatanehem. It says all of these cases. So you're asking me, my father-in-law's brother. That's the case in the Mishnah of your brother's son-in-law. That brother's son-in-law is going to look back at the person you're talking about. Wow, that's my father-in-law's brother. So that's exactly that case. You're saying your father-in-law has a brother who has a son. Correct. That's the case in the Mishnah of your father's brother, son-in-law. So this is your father-in-law to son-in-law. So that son-in-law looks at the, oh, this is my father-in-law. Exactly. So the son-in-law is going to see the son of your father-in-law's brother. That's how he's going to look at that case in the Mishnah. Your father-in-law's sister's son is basically the same as the case of your mother's brother's son-in-law. That's the same exact case. Once you come out with the understanding that the female situation, which is the equivalent of the male that you've described, is exactly the same, so then that's what it's included. It's all in the Mishnah, and you're getting yourselves confused with making these complicated. These are not complicated cases. These are the cases of the Mishnah translating from the male to the female and including the idea of the ben and the ben in terms of the chatan. Now, Rav went somewhere to buy some klafim. He wanted to buy, actually, gvilim, not technically klafim, but he wanted to buy parchment. So he was walking around, and they asked him, what would be the din? It's true, look, the Mishnah says that a stepson, a chorgo, is chorgo levado. So he married a woman who had a son. So this is now his stepson. You're not allowed to be made against the stepson. But it says chorgo levado, which means not including that stepson's son-in-law, not including that stepson's son. Now, when you say levado, well, would it include his wife? How about if that stepson is married? And how about if that wife is involved in litigation about her nichse malug or something, right? And obviously, it would have to be in a case where the stepson himself is not a party to the suit because maybe he had already been meichel, the rights to the nichse malug, whatever the case is. But obviously, we'll have to figure out a case where it's not relevant directly to the stepson. So now, you're a witness to something that had to do with the nichse malug of the woman that your wife's son from another man had married. Are you allowed to testify? So Rav said, look, the way they put it in Surah is that a husband is exactly the same as a wife. And the way they put it in Pumbedisa is that a wife is exactly like a husband, meaning that a wife and a husband are considered to be exactly the same. So therefore, if you're talking about this, since it's all one thing, so then what it means is that the stepfather would be the same as his wife, which would be the mother-in-law to this daughter, and he's like this daughter-in-law, who is daughter-in-law through a stepson. He has exactly the same din as being the real chamiv, the real chamia, the real father-in-law to that daughter. Because since the parties are all the same, whether they're male or female, he, for all intents and purposes, is the father-in-law of this woman, because he's considered to be the father of the stepson, and the stepson's marriage to this woman makes him her father-in-law in exactly the same way. So, of course, it's not kosher. Now, what's the mucker of this? And here we get to where Alon jumped ahead a bit. How do we know that the Torah considers legally a man and a woman to be related as the same physical entity? And it is not from the Pasuk of Ayula Basar Echad, which is a different halacha that has to do not with the legalities of testimony and not even with the legalities of Arias directly, because we don't have that as a rule that they're exactly the same basar. But we do have Arias from the Parsha of Arias itself. Look what it says. Ervat achi avicha lo tigale. Okay, so you're not supposed to have a erva relationship with your father's brother, which is defined as, el, or some learn, defined as some learn, it's a separate iser. El ishto lo tikrav. Don't get close to your father's brother's wife. After all, she is your auntie. She ain't your auntie. She's the wife of your uncle. Now, how the heck did she become an auntie? You know, it's all very nice. You want to be, you know, good old Auntie Lynn, you know. But she's not related to you. She's married to your uncle. And the Torah says, don't get close to her nakedness. What does that have to do with me? Ah, so you see that the Torah considers to be your auntie to be really your auntie. That's an amazing chiddush. In which case, you see, halo esha dodohu. So you see from here, the Torah is taking for granted that in defining your relationship, we look at it as isha kebaala. Astoundingly, it's exactly the same. Now, when it says uba'al imo, I don't know how far we can go. I mean, I don't want to keep you too long, and we're getting very close to maximum over here, using up our time from mikvaot as well. But I just thought it was so nice to see this flowing out from the Mishnah, sort of one piece. And, you know, we'll stop soon. Let's see how far we can get in another few minutes. I hope that this hasn't been confusing. Okay? I think it's as clear as possible to make it. I couldn't figure out how to get it any clearer than this. But based on the way that the Pusik is going, I think it was the best way to clarify it. So I'd like to see it from within the Pusik. So now we've been able to take two Pusikim, out of which we were able to derive the entire Mishnah and all of these minor details of the Mishnah. And they all make sense based on simple Yesodot. I love it. Okay, so now the Mishnah went ahead and said, Baal Imo, your mother's husband, which would be not only him, but him and his son-in-law. Now, I don't understand. What do you mean, him and his son? Your mother husband's son, I mean, assuming it's a son from between the two of them, is your brother. I mean, your half-brother, right? Because you've got the same mother. So if your mother's husband's son, so he's related to you because you have the same mother. So then that's achiv. Omer b'yermia, no. Obviously, that's not what we're referring to over here. We're talking about a case where you're unrelated. Totally. So in other words, this is a son, but not from between the two of them. It's from another woman. So it's neither your father's son, because this is your mother's husband, not your father. And he didn't have this son with your mother. So you share no genes whatsoever, right? completely unrelated. Nonetheless, it is a case of achi ha'ach. When we're saying that it is considered to be your brother, legabe, the dinim of edus, that's talking about where that the stepson that we're saying is a brother, that's where he does have a half-brother, right? And that half-brother from his mother actually is from this father. Not his father, but it's the same father as the son that we said of the stepfather. So even though this stepson, this chorgo, he doesn't share any genes with the brother's brother, he does share genes with the brother. And that brother shares genes with his brother. And therefore, if there's a half-brother that's there, he is considered to be related because of the fact that this is only according to some Rishonim, if there really is that case. It's not where the theoretical possibility. It means there really is a half-brother that they did have with each other, plus another brother that was there from a different woman. So now we've got these three brothers, and they're interrelated through each other, but they're not really interrelated to that first generation. Afal Pekin, it's considered to be the same as the brother because of the brother's brother. Whereas Reb Chisda said, I don't understand. What kind of relationship is that? A relationship has to at least share some genetics or share a direct in-law relationship. But over here, you don't have either of those. So he was Machshir, a brother of a half-brother. So he said, it's okay. And everybody says to him, well, didn't you hear what Reb Yirmiyah said? That you can be related because of a brother of a brother, meaning a half-brother who's related to a zero brother, but who is a half-brother on the other side? Said Reb Chisda, I heard it, but I ain't listening. Lo shmi'ali. Makes no sense to me. Klomar, lo svirali. So wait a minute. So then if that's not what it meant, so then what does it mean? Then we're back to our problem. We how did we get to Reb Yirmiyah? Reb Yirmiyah said it's talking about that they're not related genetically. Why? Because if they were related genetically, so then if the Mishnah gave you one example of a mother's son is your brother. So then I don't understand what it's adding. It said your brother, and then it says separately your mother's son, which is also your brother. Now we're back to that question. If you say you don't believe Reb Yirmiyah's answer, that doesn't mean a real son that she had with that father that she married. It's not your father. Says the Gemara, I don't have a problem with that, says Reb Yirmiyah. Because basically, I think the Tana just wants to make it very clear. We said your brother. Normally, we took that to mean your father's son, your paternal brother. And now, by saying this case, it's making it clear that it makes no difference whether it's your paternal brother or it's your maternal mother. That's all. That's no big deal. Omar Rav Chisda, mechutanim are not related. So in other words, you have the father of the chosen. And you have the father of the Kala, they can actually testify for, against, together with, they have no relationship. Below Domus, all of this stuff that they're going, mein Tyre Mechutin, this is Gewaldike Mechutin, they're not related at all. So they can put their hands around each other's shoulders and dance and mitzvah tansi and the whole business, but it's all tansi. It's not really Nogea. They are not similar to any connection. Lo doma la dadi, elaki achla ladana. You know what they're like? They're like, you're taking a barrel. So normally, remember how the barrels were made. They were actually solid pieces that you had to cut off the top in order to open the barrel. But then when you've got an open barrel, you try to fit something in. Maybe you take a plate and it sort of fits. Well, that's what they're like. They're like a barrel with a lousy cover. They're pretending to be the same barrel. So they're just like an achla to a dana. Okay, so we had in the Mishnah the case of a stepson. And we have two interesting brises. Tanurabana. Chorgolevado. Reb Yossi Omer Giso. So one brisa says that this din of a choreg is only the Choreg, but it seems to be saying, Rabbi Yossi is saying it means his brother-in-law too, and another Brisa has it in the other direction because it uses who Rabbi Yossi said in the first Brisa. Rabbi Yossi becomes Tanakama this Brisa. The Tanakama of the previous Brisa, which was Yehuda, becomes the second Shita in this Brisa. Now, it's not quite clear. Is this the same thing? Or are they arguing? Giso levado? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Amar Chorgo? So what the heck? My Kamar. Ile Mahochi Kamar. It basically, what we're saying is that they're saying the same thing. And Chorgo levado. So in the first verse, we have Rabbi Yehuda saying, I want to stress his stepson, but I agree that the same thing would be true. Only the Gis, only your brother-in-law, but it doesn't include the son of your brother-in-law. And Rabbi Yossi is coming along to say, Giso Levado, that says in the Mishnah, well, he has obviously a different vision that it's actually a din in Giso Levado, but the same thing is true of the Chorgo, which is a stepson. So in other words, there's not really a Machlokas. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi agree that whether we're talking about a Choreg or we're talking about a Gis, it's not a reference to their children or to their son-in-laws, right? But is that possible? So then the Mishnah says, Giso hu ubno v'chatano, is not going according to either of them. Lo Rabbi Yehuda, v'lo Rabbi Yossi. Because the Mishnah makes it very clear that a brother-in-law is actually, I mean, it's got to be one of them, isn't it? We don't know of any other Shita. It actually does include the children and the son-in-laws. Maybe what they're saying is like this. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, Chorgo is only him, not his son, not his son-in-law, but his brother-in-law. There is like all of the other cases in the Mishnah, and it would include who ubno v'chatano. Rabbi Yossi saying, actually, the giso levado, the brother-in-law is the only one that is limited, but the Chorgo, the son-in-law, would include even the son-in-law's son and the son-in-law's son-in-law, and that would mean that the machlokas would be which one of the two. In other words, one of them is only himself and is not part of the fundamental list, which remember, yesterday we said we're eight, and we're going to be getting to that in a moment, but one of them is not included, but it's a machlokas, which one? Is it the choreg or is it the gis? But then we got a real problem. Because remember, Rabbi Chia yesterday said that there are eight, basically, avot. There are eight basic cases. And those eight basic cases would include their sons and their son-in-laws. So that means the eight turns into eight more with the sons, eight more with the son-in-laws, which gives us 24. But that's a problem because it's not going to anybody. Because both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda say that there are only one case that is additional to the eight, but the Mishnah has 10 cases. And the only one that it does not include is the Choreg. Rabbi Chia lists only eight basic cases. And that means if there's only eight cases, two of the cases in the Mishnah are not meant to be a vote in the sense of also including their children and their son-in-laws, in which case nobody is going according to that Rabbi Chia. If neither Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi would exclude both of the two additional cases, so then we have nine, and it should be 9 times 3, not 8 times 3. So how do you get 24? It should be 27. So who exactly would Rabbi Chia be going according to? So that doesn't make sense. Ela hachikama, what we'll have to say, is as follows, that chorgo levado avogiso hubno chatano. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying only the choreg, like the Mishnah. Masheke, the gis, he includes sons and son-in-laws. Rabbi Yossi is coming to say, no, even the gis, for sure the choreg is alone, but even the brother-in-law is only him and not his children, and not his son-in-laws. And therefore, it would work out very well, because the Mishnah that lists Chorgo Levado would be going according to Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Chia, who takes out two of the 10 cases in the Mishnah and does not include them as avot, he would be taking out, like Rabbi Yossi said, both the choreg and the geese. Again, as I said initially, before many of you came, the detailed elements, because the dapim are so long, I'm not going to be going into the details of the details that are machlokas in the Rishonim, the implications and so on, because we're simply going to keep falling behind. But I do want to concentrate the way I have been concentrating in great detail. I hope it's not much too detailed like we did yesterday on the fundamental things, because I think once those become clear, the whole confusing issue becomes very clear. So it's worthwhile spending more time on that, less time on these particular details like the machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda here. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Shmuel, Halacha k'Rabbi Yossi. Now, we've got two very important Rabbi Yossis. So I'm not quite myself this morning, so excuse me. We've got two very important Rabbi Yossis. One is the Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah talks about the way that the Mishnah is going according to a later version that Rabbi Akiva made up, right? But the Mishnah Rishayna, which Rabbi Yossi speaks out, would not include anybody that wasn't Roy to be Yoresh. Then we have the Rabbi Yossi that we just mentioned now, the Rabbi Yossi that argues with Rabbi Yehuda about whether Giso or Chorgo is Levad, right? Now, when Rabbi Yehuda Mishmuel Paskin like Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara took it for granted that what we're referring to is the big issue of Rabbi Yossi. The big issue of Rabbi Yossi, of course, is that profound fundamental question. Does it include the Yorshin, or is it a more broad halach? We thought he meant the halachas like Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. So, that runs into problems. I'll tell you why. Because Ahimat Tanta, Davichatime Letregise. Two sisters were married to guys. Those two guys, who were unrelated to each other, but were married to two sisters, they signed on as the Edim to a gift certificate. Now, Rabbi Yosef, he thought that that should be okay. Why? Because, after all, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel said, now, look, it's like Rabbi Yosef. And we thought that that meant halakas like Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah. So I ask you, can two brother-in-laws ever inherit each other when they're not related? Of course not, because the wives are not going to inherit the husbands. And therefore, if you paskin like Rabbi Yossi, so then these guys are not related to each other, because Rabbi Yossi said only people who are related in terms of Yerusha. So this is a perfectly kosher contract. Okay, Abaya, who was there, said, what makes you think that when we paskened like Rabbi Yossi, we meant Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah? Maybe what we meant was Rabbi Yossi in the Machlokas with Rabbi Yehuda. That's who he was paskening like. So, Mimai de Rabbi Yossi de Masnissin, according to which two brother-in-laws would be kosher for Edus. Maybe it's referring to Rabbi Yossi in the Braita. And Rabbi Yossi in the Braita is Davka, the one who says that the brother-in-laws are included. And he says, Giso Levado, right? Okay, so how do you explain that? No, said Rabbi Yosef. Of course Shmuel didn't mean that. Because we know there was a story where Shmuel explained, when we're talking about brother-in-laws, and that concept of brother-in-laws is a little bit, you know, unclear, because, I mean, there's different ways to be brother-in-laws. So he wanted to make it clear that a brother-in-law means that they are married to sisters. It doesn't mean your brother's wife or anything like that. It's referring to two men married to two sisters. Okay. So Shmuel, well, he asked him, what do you mean by a brother-in-law? And he gave an example. He said, me and Pinchas. Me and Pinchas, now Pinchas was his brother. So he says, brother-in-laws like me and Pinchas, who are married to two sisters, yes, we're also brothers. That's the only kind of brother-in-laws that are us. But regular brother-in-laws, Gisi the Alma, two men married to two girls, they're not related. So Avodah Gita, the Yom HaShapir, right? I mean, otherwise it'd be crazy. Why would he be identifying brother-in-laws as people like me and my brother Pinchas? He's sort of facetiously saying the only brother-in-laws I know that are usher is if they're also brothers, like me and my brother. Isn't that what he meant? So I don't know that that's what he meant. Maybe he was just trying to explain the type of brother-in-law we mean. He's saying, Pinchas and I, that is an example of what a brother-in-law. If my sister is married to a guy, that's not my brother-in-law that we're referring to over here as Giso. So, I mean, that has to be clarified. I mean, we use that word brother-in-law so many different ways. So he's saying when we're talking about brother-in-laws, we are talking about the two sisters married to two guys. It happens to be that me and my brother are that. I mean, we're also brothers, but that is irrelevant. Maybe that's what he meant to say. So Rav Yosef said, okay, he said to the guy who had this gift certificate, signed by these two brother-in-laws. So he said to him, you know what? All right, I can't sit here arguing with everybody. Go find the Edim that saw the handing over of this shtar. That way you don't have to rely on the Edim in the shtar, because the Edim of the Mesira will also be able to be good enough to back the shtar. So go ahead and be kona it with the Edim Mesira. So just bring the people that saw it. And then it would be a good gift certificate, because that's Rebbe Lezer Shita, that we go according to Edim Mesira. So then Abaye said, no, 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 you can't do that. What? No, because Rabbi Abba said that Rabbi Elazar, who holds you can take Eide Mesira, is made that if it's Mizuyaf mitocho, if there's no Edim in the contract, fine. But if you've got also Edim in the contract, that's worse, because then the shtar itself looks like a phony shtar, and you can't use a phony shtar, even if you have witnesses that the phony shtar was handed over. So that won't work either. Oh, gosh. So Rabbi Yosef says to the guy who had the gift certificate, just get out of here. Nobody's allowing me to give me it yet. You're stuck. Forget about the gift. Lo shavki li deot vini lach. Nobody's allowing me to give you this gift. You're out of luck. Okay, next thing that we had was that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if somebody was married, and then the situation changes. So we spoke about, remember, in the Mishnah, a man's daughter marries someone. So now that person becomes possible to him because he is his brother, his son-in-law. If that daughter dies, then that man is no longer related to him. And now he can become a witness on a new case where he saw it after he was no longer related. So Rabbi Yehuda said, if that daughter had any children, so that maintains the relationship between the grandfather of the children and the father of the children. That was Rabbi Yehuda's sheet. So Omer Rabbi Tanchum, Omer Rabbi Tabla, Omer Rabbi Bruna, Omer Rav, that's how we pask. Halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rava Omer Rabbi Nachman, ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. We don't pask like that, and in fact, even if someone has a child from the grandfather, and both grandfather and father are here, they are not related, because they were only related as long as the wife was around. That's how we paskin. V'chein omer Rabbi Bar Bachana, omer Rabbi Yochanan, ein halakha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Now, this may not be correct. It's the last piece of Rabbi Bar Bachana, because others learn that this is a confusion of Rabbi Bar Bachana's psak about something else that got confused with this. The Ikar Amaseh Loha, the Rabbi Bar Bachana on a different brisa, and that was referring to the Rabbi Yossi, which we got talking about Rabbi Yossi versus Rabbi Yehuda, got confused with this. This is a different issue. Et zo darash Rabbi Yossi Haglivi. What does the Torah mean when it says, come to the people who are going to be judging in your times? Now, we find it difficult to believe that the Torah was addressing this pasuk specifically to people living in a time that allows quantum time travel, and is saying you cannot go find a Beis Din that's headed by Shmuel, let's say, or you want to go to Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, and you set your time travel. Yeah, Doc, you set your time travel to that. That's not going to work. You must go to someone in your own local time. Hard to believe that all of these years we've been reading that pasuk and didn't even know what it meant. So Actually, people never believed that was even possible. Ella, so it must be, when it's talking about someone in your own time, you know, it's talking about someone who is kosher in your time, but was kosher in a different, not kosher in a different time. That would be a relative who became unrelatived. So, okay, so that's cute. So now you could actually have somebody who's roy to be shofet in this time, but would not be roy to be shofet in another time. That's the pshat. So, Sheshayakorov v'nitrachek. And that psak was where Rabbi Bar Bar Chana Paskin that it would be okay. That's where he said, halacha could be Yossi Haglili. But he wasn't addressing the machlokas about the grandfather and father at the same time. And it was actually a case where we had Mar Ukva, there were children of Mar Ukva's father-in-law. So Bnei Chamua de Mar Ukva. So Mar Ukva's wife, who was their sister, she died. And so because of that, they were no longer relatives. They were Krovim and Israchaku. They weren't related anymore to Mar Ukva. And so they wanted to come. They used to be his gisim. They used to be his brother-in-laws, and now they're not, because his wife died. So he was a very famous dayan. So, okay, so they wanted to come to him and have a court case. And he said to them, I cannot judge your case. So they said to him, why not? Just because we have children? So you hold that the halakha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and you're the grandfather, and therefore you're still related to us, the fathers? That's not true. I'm going to bring you a letter from Rabbi Eliashiv, and that came from Eretz Yisrael. And he paskins that in halakha Rabbi Yehuda. Anan maisina nigarta mima'arova de'in halakha Rabbi Yehuda. Mar Ukva said to them, you know, boys, what do you think? That I'm stuck to you with super glue? Otu bekaba dekira idepaknu bechu. I'm not stuck to you guys with super glue. I know that. The reason that I'm not able to be your judge is because you never listen to me, you jerks. How am I going to be a judge? Well, you think you know better. Every time we have an argument, you know better. You're not going to listen to what I paskin. I'm not going to go be a judge on people who don't listen to me. And therefore, when I say I can't paskin, I didn't say that. You ain't going to listen. So a judge cannot judge people who view him as, you know, our good old friend, you know, our dear father-in-law. Oh, no, no. Okay. Next case.
Recording?
Sorry?
New recording? Or till the Mishnah? This is part of yesterday's blot. When does Rebbe want to start the next blot? Shouldn't we do a new recording?
When you come late, you don't know what's going on. I gave an introduction explaining that I'm speeding up things that are not fundamental. I'm going to be concentrating, because the dapim are so enormous, I'm going to be concentrating on the ikar inyonim so that they become very clear instead of the mind being all...
No, I agree, but where does...
And I mentioned at the time that I would like to go to the Mishnah appended to yesterday's daf, and that then we can start at the Mishnah today's daf. So we're always grateful for the presence of our beloved Reb Barnea, who's, I think we're going on 50 years together. I think, I don't know, maybe
it's
more.
But I have to say, this more, is amazing. Okay, so. It's an amazing daf for today, because the whole country is talking about how the head judge judged something with his brothers and his relatives. That's the inyan that is rocking the country. A judge.
Okay, I thank God, because I am unable to live with any of this news. I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't look at the news. I don't hear the news. And I'm not even sure who's in charge of the government anymore, thank God. Or if there is a government anymore. I figure I'll wake up when we have a real government, a melech.
Okay. Amen.
All right. Anyway, so let's go on. Ohev, says the Mishnah, when we paskin, or we tried paskining the Mishnah that somebody, Chachomim argued, we said if somebody is a great friend or a great enemy, then he's possible. Now, Chachomim say, lo nechshidu Yisrael, to actually lie for Adas. So the Mishnah explained, what do we mean by an ohev? That would be pasul. What we mean is a shushbin. Yeah. So the ohev is the guy who is his groomsman. And how many days is this? Is it the whole Sheva Brachas? V'kama? Omer Baba, Omer Birbe, Omer Rav? Yes, a whole Sheva Brachas. He's considered to be in a state of great love for this guy, and because of that, he can't actually be an eight. Kol Shivat Yemei Mishteh. Whereas Rabbanu Mishmei de Rava Amre, after the first day, it's no longer so hatsi-tatsi. So the wedding itself, yes, the day of the wedding, but once it's post-wedding, Sheva Brachas, everybody gets it, everybody's nervous already. Anyway, so after that, Miyom HaRishon Ve'elech, he is kosher. And who's
concerned? Honeymoon's over.
Hasone, kosher lo diberimo shlosha yamim mitoch. Okay, so now he is unable to have a word with him. Who's the mucker for all of this? It's a fascinating pasuk. Tana Rabbana, in the psukim that discussed the halachas of Ir Miklat, where it talks about murdering someone supposedly accidentally. So the pasuk says over there, "V'hu lo oyev lo v'lo mevakesh ra'ato." Right. So we have okay. V'im bepeta below eva hadafo hoishlich alav kol kli below tzidia v'hu lo oyev lo v'lo mevakesh ra'ato. So therefore, it's totally accidental. However, if he is Oyevlo and is Mivakeshrato, then it may look like an accident, but there may be other factors that are involved, and some accidents are sort of destined to happen. So there we don't give a din of Golas to that person, because only if it's truly a Shogik. Now, that is a completely extra, really, because the whole parsha that repeats itself again when we have the Arei Miklat and Dvorim, so it says over there that you're supposed to, this is the new tzivoy of Shesh Arei Miklat, which include the Arei Miklat that will be in the future, because there's already three, so it's another three. So there it also repeats the same thing, Lanus Shama Rotzeach, Asher Yitzach Et Re'eu Belo Bivli Da'at, V'hu Lo Sonelo Mitmo Shilshom. So it said that already, right? So we know that there can't be any sinavu lo yevlo. So what is this referring to? This is talking about edus. That's the pshat. So tana rabbana v'hu lo yevlo yeideno. Such a person can be an aid for this person, but not if he is a soni. And then it repeats v'lo mevakesh ra'ato. That means only someone who's not an enemy is able to be a dayan. How do we know that this is referencing dayan? Because it continues on, v'shavtu ha'eda. So v'shavtu ha'eda means that we're not just randomly selecting another sugya that this is about. The din of the judicial process, which includes shoftim and edus, is innately part of the same idea of being a non-sonei and a non-ohev. Wait. Doesn't say anything about ohev, it just says about sone here. Ashkechad sone. So, okay, I see that you cannot be a judge if you hate his guts. But how do we know that that's true just because you're in love with someone? Because, you know, lots of people, when they pronounce things, when you say, ohev, you know, I mean, listen to ohev lo is... Did you say Oyevlo with a hey, or did you say Oyevlo with a yod? And the way people talk, they don't know how to stress. So an Oyev could be an Oyev. It sounds exactly the same. So basically, what a trusha. So basically, the pusik is making an Oyev and an Oyev exactly the same.
It sounds like Eov. Did you say Eov or Oyev?
Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful. Excellent. So kribe yachi, v'ulo Oyevlo v'lo Oyevlo. Yeidenu. V'lomevakesh ra'ato, therefore, would have to mean or tovato, right? Yedinenu. Oh, come on, you got to be getting sense to Gemara. I mean, you know how to read it, you don't know how to read it. It doesn't say anything about ohev. It says oyev. I mean, who are we trying to fool over here? How can you make a The basis is a simple svara. If the Torah said an oyev is not allowed to be an aid, so why would that be true? Mishum demaracha kadate. It's because of the psychology of the issue over here. So ohev is the same problem. The psychology is the issue. He basically is too close to this person. And therefore, he would be puzzled both as a dayan and as a aid. And what about the Rabbanan, who say that's crazy? We never suspect a Yisrael kosher that he would say aid us. What do they hold? I lo oyev lo velo mevakesh lo et ra'ato. What do they say? They say we agree, but only benogea judges. Judges, remember, a judge has to be able to be mahapech in this person's chus and in the other person's chus, the guy against him. He has to be completely able to be open to very close nuances of judgment, and anything that would make it difficult for him to do that, honestly, is enough to puzzle him. But that has nothing to do with a witness. A witness is just telling you what it is that he saw. And that we're not chayish on. Yes, Rabbanan, but there's two languages there. Lo oyev, lo velo mevakesh ra'ato. What's the difference between the two things? My darshi be with the second one. So, chad l'dayan, and the other one is coming to teach me a whole different thing. The idach, the lo mevakesh ra'ato, that's the brayta that says, Amar Rav Yosi b'Rav Yehuda, v'hu lo oyev lo v'lo mevakesh ra'ato. This means that two talmidei chachamim who can't stand each other cannot be judges on the same case. Because since anything that the other guy says, he's an idiot. It's obviously the opposite. So then if that's the case, they cannot really objectively examine the case together in terms of the halacha, and therefore they're not kosher dayanim.